Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
We about to party, unrestricted, got the house now, we gon' turn it up, up, bring the house down, got that bass space pumping, make them bounce now, flossing like they bossing and the freaks are coming out now.
Welcome to All Elite Wrestling Unrestricted, the official podcast of AEW. I'm Will Washington, and what now?
I was like, you did it backwards. Remember, it's AEW Unrestricted, All Elite Wrestling. And I was like, oh, this is fancy. This is fancier.
You know, it's funny because my notes actually say All Elite Wrestling Unrestricted, but whatever. Aubrey, you're here. I'm here.
I am here. Who else do we have here?
But we're not going to waste any time today because I want to get straight into our guest. We're joined by the governor, the self-proclaimed next James Bond. Mm-hmm. It's Mr. Anthony Ogogo.
Hey. Hello, friend.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
I got to ask about this. Okay. So next James Bond. so why next?
Because next one's Idris Elba. I'm not gonna listen. He's better than me. I'm not going to lie. Better than me. Bigger. Probably more handsome. But then.
Debatable.
The next 4 to 8. But Idris is like maybe 50 now. So he's probably maybe got 2 Bonds in him. Now, 4 to 8, maybe 4 or 5 years per Bond. In 11 years' time, listen, I'm going to be ready to go. I'm not deluded. I'm not going to say I'm the next Bond, but I'm the next Bond, you know? You guys get it.
You have enough time to, like, season, to marinate, and then eventually,
exactly.
Like,
yes.
Like a fine wine.
100%. And learn to act.
Important.
But up until now, who is your quintessential Bond?
The best Bond is Daniel Craig, 100%. Daniel Craig is unbelievable. He's gritty, exactly what Bond should be. Second to that, Sean Connery, original Bond.
Okay, yeah.
I like Pierce Brosnan. Like, Pierce gets a lot of stick. I like Pierce Brosnan. He was a good Bond. And he was actually my entry-level Bond. Mm-hmm. GoldenEye, like 96, I think.
Yeah, so I agree with that. He's my entry-level Bond as well. But the funny thing is, I think he's a great Bond with not the greatest Bond movies. It's like Die Another Day was okay. And like, but he himself, I think, is a great Bond. And I think that's why he tends to get overlooked in the Bond lore. Cause like Daniel Craig just had awesome movies, right? Like Casino Royale, I could watch that a million times over.
Skyfall,
the greatest Bond ever. And for me, top 5 films of all time. I went to the premiere to that. That's soon after the Olympic Games. It was unbelievable. So good.
What would you bring to the Bond role?
Hey, you're looking at me. What I bring to the Bond role?
I was like, I know the answer to that question.
What
Will.
I bring to the Bond role? Goodness me, Will. We're going to fall out, man. We're going to fall out, right?
Besides the obvious, what?
I'm a flipping governor, mate. I bring what I want when I want. Nah, dapper. Listen, I could be dapper. I was texting Sanjay, actually, recently, and I was pitching an idea to Sanjay. In it, I was like saying, wow, I think my idea is fantastic. And I actually said the word, I chuckled when I said it. I said, I can kick it in corporate and I can kick it in the hood. I'm the kind of like, you know, I can do both. I can talk, you know, I can go to the execs and talk to them, or I could, you know, not. So I bring different flavors to whatever I do. And that's what I'm trying to do with wrestling. You know? I'm trying to bring my authenticity to my character and have an amazing career.
You're somebody that you can bring home to mom and you're pleasant and charismatic, but someone who I wouldn't want to meet in a dark alley.
100, do you know what? It's funny you said that. I did a TV show earlier this year called SAS Who Dares Wins, one of the biggest TV shows in the UK. Essentially, they take 12, 15 celebs and we do special forces training. And then when I was doing my big VT interview before, they said to me, like, sum up yourself in a nutshell. And I said, I'm sensitive, I'm kind, I'm caring, but I will punch you in the face if you're a prick. And I think that sums me up. Like, I'm kind, I'm nice, I put my arm on your shoulder. Well, you know, we've had some lovely conversations, me and you.
Oh, yeah.
But if you're a dickhead, I will fuck you up if I have to. And I think I kind of embody, and that's just me, right? I can be, I think I'm a very nice person. I think I was raised very well. My mum did a great job raising me and my sisters. But if pushed, I can be a very not pleasant man.
Let's talk about that a little bit, because I know you and I have talked about your family a little bit. So you grew up in the UK. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about your family.
Growing up, difficult but interesting. Lovely but very hard. Amazing mom, single parent. I've got four sisters. My dad was, how do I say piece of shit without saying piece of shit? My dad was, we didn't really get on. He was a fantastic man, very inspiring, come from Nigeria. Went to London when he was like in his 20s. A very inspiring, wonderful, charismatic, charming man. Just a terrible husband and an awful father. You know, we found out a lot when I was growing up. He was just wasn't an ideal dad, which is difficult because, like, you know, he was such a wonderful man. And I saw snippets of it. And I saw how he was kind of looked upon in the community. But it just was bad to us. So very violent towards me and my sister, very violent towards me. And my sisters a bit, but yeah. So my mom, listen, mate, done an amazing job, raised me and my four sisters. They've all got degrees. I've got an Olympic medal. You know, my mom done an amazing job, and we all had very. She's my hero. My mom's my hero. You know, without doubt. Growing up was difficult. I got into a lot of trouble. I was very angry. Had a lot to be angry about. A lot of dad issues. Looking back now, a lot of self worth issues, identity crisis. I started boxing when I was 12. When I first walked in the gym, I thought, this is me. I mean, this is me. I had a lot of anger and a lot of energy, and boxing, I could channel it. Like, for the first time in my life, when I was 12 years old, I was punching people. Then rather than getting told off, I was getting well done. Rather than getting told off, I was getting my name in the newspaper. I was winning big trophies, almost as big as me. I was winning medals. I then got to box around the world. Became junior Olympic champion, junior world champion, 10-time British champion. All these amazing things. Where a kid where I'm from, a small little town, no opportunity. People don't look like me. People don't do great things in their life looking like me where I'm from. And I wanted to buck that trend. And I've lived an amazing life. Don't get me wrong, lots of ups and downs, lots of setbacks. But I'm very proud, actually, of the journey that I've lived. And the good thing is, there's still a lot of journey left to go. And I genuinely want to be Bond in 12 years' time. So that gives me about 10, 12 years in between to have some fun and do some stuff. And I'm a wrestler now. I want to scratch the itch because boxing was great for me, but ended very bitterly, very sad, lots of ups and downs, ending a massive down. And I got this big, big, big itch that I'm dying to scratch. And I really hope wrestling is the thing to enable me to do that.
I want to talk about the wrestling side of things. You mentioned having just appeared on one of the biggest shows in the UK. And speaking of big shows in the UK, we just recently had All in London.
Yes.
Record-setting crowd, an amazing time, an amazing night. I got to see you there both before and after. You got to have a moment that involved also Paul White and Jeff Jarrett and the aforementioned Sanjay Dutt, Jay Lethal. How did all of that come together?
I got to have a moment. I think I could have had a much bigger moment. I'll be very honest in this podcast. The reason why I wanted to do it, because I want to be really honest and kind of tell my story. Listen, London is my hometown. Mm-hmm. I was signed to I was AEW's first developmental talent. I came here with no wrestling experience. I trained unbelievably hard to get real good really quick. And I just think I should have been on that card. Now, not obviously how the previous 12 months had went. I hadn't done anything, right? Because I haven't, but I'm desperate to work hard. I want the opportunities. I want to go. And I was gutted to be there. Even in that moment, right? That was put together last minute, actually.
We told that story on the show, didn't we? That
I think we did.
I think we did, because I was in the creative meeting where that was all pitched, and literally it all came together. And I was excited to see it come together, but very last minute.
Really last minute. I was in the studio. I was wearing a nice red suit in the studio with Paul and Kip and Renee. Renee, by the way, goodness me. You know when you see somebody work and you see how good they are? Like, I knew she's always good, but goodness me, she is stellar at what she does with the noises in the earpiece, and she's a queen. Anyway, and they said to me, "Oh, do you want to do something?" And I was like, 100 million%. I've been dying to do something. This is Wembley. I've been coming to Wembley Stadium my entire life. This means so much more to me than anybody else. And then the comeback, the being back in London, performing in London for the first time since the Olympic Games in 2012. And then even with that, I'm like, and I'm not being ungrateful. I'm not being disrespectful. I hope I don't mean to come across as disrespectful. But even with that, it was like, you know, I hadn't been seen in a year because I haven't been seen. I've been waiting for the phone to call to do this. And And then we came out, me, Paul, and Grado, British wrestling legend Grado, come and done a little thing. And it was like, Paul's music hit. I get that because he's a big star. He's been around for 25 years and, Captain Insano and all that. He's a wrestling legend. I get his music hit. And then I came out with him, like his little brother. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I haven't been seen in a year. And then we both kind of done the stop, turned around and done, give it one of these ones. Then Grado came out. And Grado is he's a lovely guy. I love Grado. He's a lovely guy, really, really, really good. But he's not signed to AEW. He's like, I don't know, he's not signed to AEW. He's never going to headline a show in AEW, I don't think, maybe, unless if it's wrestling, right?
And never say never.
Never say never in wrestling. He's really, really good. But it's like, Paul is like at the end of his career, right? Grado is not even signed to the company. And I was the little shit bit in a sandwich coming out in the middle. Whereas like, I generally feel like I can headline shows in AEW. I generally feel like at Wembley, be it next year or year before, I can be in the top of the thing. That was when I joined AEW. That's what was pitched to me. And I'm thinking, I haven't been seen in a year. I'm back in London. I could have made a massive, this could have been like, not all about me, but I could have been made much bigger in that moment. Me coming out, my music hitting, fuck, Gogo's back, fuck, Gogo's. I watched the Olympics here 10 years ago. And I think with the ball's been dropped many times along the way. I think we could have done more of me. It wasn't quite when I joined AEW, it wasn't quite what I thought it was going to be. It hasn't quite turned out thus far what I hoped it could have been, what I think it could have been, But listen, that being said, all I can do is work hard and give it my all. And when the call comes, hopefully the call will come, just show up and turn up, And that's what I'm doing.
Heck yeah, man. There's so much more to talk about. I mean, we've just kind of sampled talk about your Olympic career, and I want to get more into that after this break here on AEW Unrestricted. AEW Unrestricted, Aubrey, Will, Anthony. This is an awesome conversation, just learning a bit about Anthony's background and whatnot. I've known him to be a wonderful person for a very long time, so I always love when we have great people on the podcast. It's like, hey, now everyone else gets to know how great you are, so thank you for being here.
Be kind.
We've touched on your Olympic background, and obviously it's a big part of who you are as a person, but also who you are as a character. So you started boxing when you were 12, and eventually ended up working towards the Olympics. Like, what is the whole qualifying process like?
Oh, goodness me. Wow. So in short, from Europe, you've got to be obviously number one in the UK, number one in Britain, then go to a qualifier. Top eight from Europe qualify the Olympic Games. It was really, really, really involved. I dislocated my shoulder in the year two qualifiers. One was in October in the World Championships in Azerbaijan. Second one was in Turkey. At the Worlds, I'd just beaten the world number two, and I had one more fight to qualify. In the fight against world number two, my shoulder came out the socket in the fight. And then the fight to beat the Brazilian to qualify, I didn't win. He was a southpaw, so to beat southpaws, you've got to throw a lot of right hands and left hooks. And my shoulder came out, so I didn't win that fight. I had to condense a twat. I had a tore my labrum. I had a big, big, big shoulder surgery. I condensed a 10-month rehab into 4 months to get back to the second.
Oh, my God.
Like, when I say, yeah, my shoulder. So at the Olympic Games, my shoulder was still subluxed, semi-dislocated. At the Olympics, so I qualified the second time, in the most unbelievable comeback fight in history, which I was boxing a Georgian to qualify. But in Olympics, three-minute rounds, so 9 minutes of boxing. After the first round, I was 3 points down. After the second round, I was 6 points down. So a bit of context for you. In the previous four-year Olympic cycle from Beijing 2008 to London 2012, not one person in elite international boxing had ever overturned a three-point deficit going into the last round.
And you're double that.
So 4 points is impossible. 5 points was, what's not even point, trying. I was 6 points down. I overturned 6 points in the last round. In the process, I gave myself exercise-induced asthma because I was working so hard. My poor little alveolis in my lungs just burst. And I qualified in the most unbelievable comeback fight in history. I eventually qualified after, I said, two shoulder surgeries. My shoulder came out the year before also. So 5 weeks, and this is why I'm very well known in the UK, because I did win a gold medal at the Olympic Games, which my talent, I should have won a gold medal in the Olympic Games. I was very bitter that I didn't win a gold medal at the Olympic Games. But the reason why I was so well known, and I was a star of the GB boxing team after London, because my mum, who I mentioned before, is my hero, she had a brain aneurysm 5 weeks before the Olympic Games. So the whole Olympics, she's in a coma. She should be dead. I snuck out the Olympic Games on three occasions. Olympics for 2.5 weeks. my fight. The opening ceremony was on a Friday night. On the Saturday was my first fight. The final, the middleweight division, is on the last day. Semi-final was the day before. So my whole competition for 2 weeks and 4 days, I was boxing. Boxing every few days, training in between, losing weight, making the 75 kilo, 165 pound weight limit as a middleweight. I snuck out the Olympics three times, snuck out the village three times to get in my car, drive up to Cambridge. Bear in mind, over the course of 2 weeks, I was become one of the most recognizable people in the country at the time. I drive up to Adam Brooks, so about 2 hours away, 2.5 hours. I'd flirt with the nurse to get me in the hospital to see my mom because she was in intensive care. And that's what I did. That was my Olympic Games. My Olympic Games, it was, on one hand, it was the most amazing time of my life because I'm now living up my childhood dream. On the other hand, I thought my mom's going to die. I'm never going to see her again. So by the time I got to the semi-final, I boxed a Brazilian. I'd beaten the Dominican, Ukrainian, the world number one, who nobody gave me a chance of beating him. The Dominican, Ukrainian, and German had all beaten that Brazilian that Olympic year. From January to August, they'd all beaten him. And I got to semi-finals, and I was just bollocks. I had nothing left. Physically, emotionally, I wasn't sleeping. Yeah, it was, and I was very bitter about that because he couldn't lace my gloves. I was so much better than him. And the Japanese guy that won in the final, the Ukrainian that I beat, punched for a living daylight out of him at the World Championships. So when my shoulder was dislocated and I had to come home and do the surgery the next day, the Ukrainian won the gold medal and Ukrainian smashed the Japanese fighter to bits, smashed him to bits. And I beat the Ukrainian in the Olympics. So I should have won the gold medal, really. But listen, life happens. Shoulda, woulda, coulda. Didn't happen. It took me a long time to be. It took me a long time to kind of learn the secret of life, or the secret of being successful, in my perspective. And that's being grateful for what you had, and not comparing to what you think you should have got. Mm-hmm. You know, I should have won a gold medal. I should have done this. And I've seen all these boxers that could not lace my gloves become a world champion. And I'm going to hurt my eye. I never got hit as a boxer. I so seldom got hit. I was fast. I was elusive. And I'm watching these boxers that could not lace my gloves go and become world champion and earn millions of pounds, millions of dollars, and living out my dream. And I was so bitter because they weren't as good as me. They didn't train as hard as me. They didn't want it as bad as me. I never cheated, never cut a corner. I left no stone unturned. And then my career got taken away from me. I'm now left blind in my left eye. And these guys that get hit way more than me, that lose, like, I was very good with my diet. I'd lose my weight very slowly over the course of a 12-week camp. These guys weren't professional. They'll cut 10 pounds a night before the fight, which is bad. I never did that. I did everything right. And I seen the backfire, and that's really unfair. I found it really, really unfair that my dreams got snatched away from me in a really cruel fashion. But ultimately, right, like, life. That's life. And I just literally, just before talking to you guys, I was doing my podcast, Getting Back Up, where I talk to people that have achieved great things in both their life and their career, but only after suffering a massive setback in adversity. And I spoke to a lad called George Peasgood. 2.5 years old, he was run over by a lawnmower. His left leg mangled, couldn't walk on his left leg. He's got a prosthetic. And then he won 2 medals in Tokyo at the Paralympics. Then last year, when he was on a bike ride training for the triathlon, he was now competing in the World Championships, he fell off his bike and smashed it. Now he's brain damaged. That poor sod is like, he has every reason to be bitter. At the very least, like for myself, I'm now able to live out a second childhood dream, being a professional wrestler. Like, I'm able to do what I love. I love seeing you guys each week and walking down the ramp, being a good guy, being a bad guy. I love it. And I've got the chance to do something again. So I could be really bitter about what I haven't got. Sure, I didn't become world champion, didn't get the gold medal. I haven't got millions and millions in the bank. But what I have got, I've got a second chance at life to live out a childhood dream, thanks to Tony Khan, AEW, and I'm doing that. So when you compare, you're just not going to be happy. When you're grateful and appreciative of what you got, you give yourself the chance to be happy, and that's what I'm doing. It's taken me a long time to learn these life lessons, but at least I'm finally here now.
I wanted to ask a little bit about the injury that ended your boxing career. It's fairly highly publicized, but just to kind of inform the AEW unrestricted audience about it.
It's public. It's not publicized because I've never really been able to tell the true story. Essentially, I walked to the boxing ring my last fight. I should be nowhere near a boxing ring. I had 2 fractures in my eye socket, which I knew about, but I was told they were old fractures and they weren't going to get any worse. And that eye socket is less likely to fracture because, like, when the fracture, you know, it heals, it's stronger than before, I was told. It's no more likely to fracture than any eye socket. I've been boxing for you know, 15 years at this point. I've had thousands of punches to the head. It's not going to fracture. I walked to the ring. I left the ring. My eye socket was shattered, had literally shattered. Had 8 fractures all around my eye socket. Now, the eye socket protects the eyeball and the soft tissues around it. It wasn't getting, so I was getting, every time I get punched in the eye was getting damaged. And the real difficult reason why I can't is a big whole thing, but basically, and in the surgery, in one of the procedures, I had an injection. I had a surgery in my eye to kind of like stem the damage, and whilst they kind of figured out what to do, because it was a really unique injury, because it happened over time. It wasn't just one incident. Basically, I was told that it was an old fracture. It wasn't. It was a brand new fracture. And I kept saying this, but there was some stuff going on, and they said it wasn't the case, but I knew it was the case. But when you spend lots of money to see the best doctors in the world, so Moorfields Eye Hospital is the oldest eye hospital in the world in North London. They're the best. Everyone who's good, everyone who's worth their soul does a 2-year residency there all around the world. They told me this. I said, but what about this? No, no, no. It's definitely this. It wasn't that. It was what I said, but what do I know, right? David Beckham doesn't go and see an Achilles surgeon and say, hey, do this. He says, what's wrong? And they fix the Achilles. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then I had an injection in one of the – I've had 10 surgeries altogether, 9 in 3 years to get back in the ring. I couldn't get back. I had one earlier this year because I still plays me up. It still gives me a lot of jip and stuff. I had an injection. They missed the muscle they were going to inject into and injected into the nerve. And now permanent paralysis in the eye. Yeah, permanent paralysis in the eye. So now my issue, yes, I've got visual damage because of my eye, because all the punches I took that night. I've had 10 surgeries on it. So I've had other issues, scar tissue and stuff. But my real issue, the reason why I find things very difficult is because my eyes move at a different speed. Mm. And I'm always getting double vision everywhere I look. Whenever I move, there's double vision. And my eyes are swimming. Then when your eyes don't work together, when they work independently, you lose depth perception. So I said, I've got my eye 78% blind in my left eye. And the really annoying thing is, and I don't mean ungrateful, but like a lot of the time, if I was 100% blind in the eye, in that fight in 2016, if my eyeball had fallen out or exploded, whatever, it would have been great. It would have been great because my dream would have ended there and then. My boxing dream is done. But I spent 3 years and over 100 grand on surgeries to get back in the boxing ring. And each time I did something, it was getting further and further and further out of my grasp. And it was heartbreaking and it was slow and it was cruel. It was getting tortured, like emotionally and physically tortured over years. 9 surgeries every single time thinking, this is going to be the one. If it had just kind of like exploded or whatever that first day, I can't box now. I now got to do something else. I now got to kind of, I'm on the path. And it wasn't this really slow thing. And also, I've got a little bit of vision in it. But the vision I get from this eye isn't what this eye sees. So although I've got 22% vision, it's even worse than having no vision because it gives me a different thing. Like I get double vision. So, I don't know if you might see him, but sometimes like I sometimes struggle to run the ropes because when people see 3 ropes, I see 6 and the ones I see are crossed over. So often I'll grab a rope and miss. So if you ever see me run and miss, it's because I've grabbed the wrong rope. I've grabbed it, but my brain thinks it's there, but it's not actually there. So I've done one of the things I'm really actually proud of is like if you saw me wrestle, you wouldn't know there's an issue because I've worked really hard. My depth, what I struggle with, I've worked really hard. I've stood there for so long, kicking the middle turnbuckle, stomp, 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 because what I don't want to do is kick through somebody's rib. And what I don't want to do is miss by 6 inches. So I've worked really, I've stood there and I've punched the turnbuckle over and over and over again to get that connection just perfect. So most people do it a little bit. I've got to do things a lot to overcome the visual impairment that I have. So going back to what I said earlier is like, I don't feel like I've been given the chance to show how good I am, how good I can be. Because I've had to work as hard as everybody else to get good at this whilst being visually impaired. Mm-hmm. But like I said, I've got, you know, I'm still a young man. I've got loads of time left and I'm going to be successful at this industry because anything I do, I'm successful at because I make it that way. You know? And that's not me being arrogant. That's just me working so fucking hard and don't stop until I come successful.
You have to believe your own hype because if you don't, who else is going to?
100%.
Yeah. Wow. I had no idea that you were like that blind in your eye. And I've worked matches with you. Holy shit.
Yeah, that's crazy that, you know, like we knew there was obviously the vision issues, but to know the extent of it and to know what could have been done and how excruciating all of that time was lost. I'm sorry to hear that. But it's incredible to hear what you've overcome to get here.
Thank you. And that's oftentimes people think I've got a chip on my shoulder and I have. I've got a massive chip on my shoulder, and rightly so. And Will, that's a snippet. I can't even say that I was in a big legal thing because this person done the wrong thing to my eye, and I didn't win the legal thing. Why? Because the whole system fucked me. And I can't even go into this. That's why I can't. That's what I said to you a minute ago. People don't really know the true extent of the injury because I can't talk about it. And it's not like I got, it's not like they said to me, "Here's £10 million, which I was suing for $13 million. Here's that now one long, and but you can't say anything." I'd be quite content if I got £10 million and can't say anything.
But I think we all would be.
I lost the case, and I still can't talk about it. I can't implicate the people that messed my crew up. And there's just. You know, and I get emotional about it. But yeah, ultimately, and I was very bitter about it because I mentioned like people fracture eye sockets all the time. They get back to playing, being basketball, being UFC, being boxing. I fractured eye socket, got it misdiagnosed, told to box. Any boxer wants to box. I boxed. The worst thing happened. They then operated on my eye as it was before the injury. They basically operated on me on the injury that was pre-fight. They didn't even know my eye socket was shattered more. And damage on job because they'd done the surgery I should have had before the fight, after the fight, not knowing that my eye is way worse after the fight now. It's just, yeah, I can't tell them all, so I'll get a letter on my doorstep I don't want to get. But ultimately, I mentioned about the chip on my shoulder. I have got a chip on my shoulder because I've worked so hard to get good at this. And I just want the opportunity to be good at this. And I said a minute ago, like, I never became world champion. I never got to the top in boxing. I got to the bronze medal, almost got the world title. I didn't get it. So I've got a massive itch I'm dying to scratch. And I just hope I'm given the chance to scratch it here because I know what I can do and what I can bring. Yeah. So hopefully other people see it as well.
Man, I'm hoping so too. And we got a lot more to talk about right here with Anthony Ogogo. This is AEW Unrestricted. AEW Unrestricted, it's Aubrey and Will with our guest, the one and only Anthony Ogogo. Let's talk about some pro wrestling. Let's talk about what you've been able to do here in AEW. Mainly, let's start about how you got started in professional wrestling. What gravitated you toward professional wrestling and deciding that this was the next path?
Well, I love it, like you guys. You know, I love it. I didn't miss a war for like 15 years. Like I'd always say, like, wrestling is my guilty pleasure. I got a Toshiba laptop, huge thing, and I travel around the world as a boxer. We travel all around the world, always on the road traveling boxing. And I took my Toshiba laptop, and no matter where I was in the world, Azerbaijan, Kazakhstan, Berlin, Lithuania, any weird little European country we went to, I'd be watching on the illegal link, watching the wrestling. I just loved it. And one of those things where I thought, when I fell in love with it as a kid, eventually I'm going to grow up and grow out of it. But the opposite happened. I got older. I loved it even more. I got even more immersed into it.
I think that's all of us, right? Yeah.
And when I retired from boxing, it was two things. Two things I was going to do. I was either, at the time, like Brexit was a big thing in the UK with then leaving the European Union. And like the politicians are just, you know, like most of them are dickheads. And then I wanted to either go into politics or pro wrestling. Two really weird things, I know. I had no idea how much politics was in pro wrestling. I just could combine the both.
There you go.
But yeah, and you know, I want to make a difference in the world at some point in my life. I'm still a bit selfish. I've still got some things I want to do. I want to scratch that itch, as I keep saying. So pro wrestling was the thing for me. I first took my first bump on my stag do, on my bachelor party when I got married. Most lads in England go to Ionapa, Greece, or if they've got a few quid, got some money, they'll go to Vegas. I went to Norwich, which is like a small city in England, and went wrestling with the local wrestling school. Soraya's family, Soraya, the Knight family.
Yeah, I was going to say, Soraya's from.
So literally,
yeah.
Zach and Soraya's nephew, Ricky, took me and my friends, taught us how to bump and do moves to each other on my wrestling, on my stag do. It was great. And I fell in love, and they got me involved in a local show. I walked in without doing anything, without knowing anything about wrestling. Again, after the Olympic Games, really well known. I've come down, I've chinned one guy, hooked somebody up, rock bottom, went to the turnbuckle, done a frog, hit this perfect frog splash. Never done it before in my entire life, other than off the side of a swimming pool into the water on holiday with the boys. You know, when you're 18, you think you're, you know, God's gift to women, which I definitely wasn't at the time, even now still. And then I sent it. I was been friends with DDP for years because when I was boxing, I was doing DDP yoga, again, a massive wrestling mark. I sent it to him. He went, bro, you can so do this, bro. And then basically, the quick little bit, I was having surgeries on my eye at the time. Hence, I was friends with Dallas. I'd come to America, stay with him for a week. We'll train together. I'll go and do my surgery, come back to that last house and fly back to England. Now, I had one surgery, the fifth surgery. My heart stopped on the operating table. My heart stopped. They had to resuscitate me back to life. Yeah. And Dallas called me. I was in hospital, that bed, that night. He said to me, how did it go? I said, not good, Dallas. This is my fifth surgery at this point. This is fifth surgery. And I said, I'll explain what happened. He said to me, bro, he said, when are you going to give this? Because earlier, he said to me, a year or so before when I first went to go and see him, he said to me, you could do this. This is after the Foxbatch thing. He said, you could do this. I mean, I could put a phone call in. I could get you like a tryout. I said, mate, so I want to focus on boxing. That's my dream. Like, thank you. I'm flattered, but this is boxing's my dream. And then he mentioned it again when I went back to him after the third surgery. Dallas, thank you, mate. Thank you so much. But listen, I've got to focus. I can't be sidetracked now. Had the surgery, the fifth surgery. My heart stopped. They had to resuscitate me back to life. I told Dallas. He said to me, bro, he said, when are you going to give this dream up and do something like this? And we had our first and only argument. I said, Dallas, I said, don't fucking stop. Just fucking stop. Stop, 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 stop. And he stopped. To be fair, never mentioned it again for another 18 months. I then retired. And everyone from boxing and everyone who's helped me personally in my career, I emailed, a message called. I sent Dallas a lovely email saying, thank you so much for helping me, blah, 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 blah. And then he said, bro, call me. This is a Sunday night. This is Sunday, the 10th of March, 2019. I was retiring the next day, doing the big media day. He said, bro, call me. And it's midnight in England. So I've called him, FaceTimed him. He always says, hey, bro, Facebook me. He means FaceTime. Facebook me, bro. So I Facebooked him. Put the light on. He said, bro, I'm sorry. You had to retire. Now do you want to do the wrestling? I said, Dallas, please, mate. So let me mourn my career. Let me mourn it. He said to me, I just want to sulk. I want to sulk and be sad. He said to me, but where's that going to get you? I went, he said, give me a call when you want. He called me 1 week later. He said to me, hey, bro, since I've been with AEW, I said, I have. He went, do you want to meet Cody? I said, I do. He said, come over next week, meet Cody. I flew over to Mexico, met Cody. And then I told him my story. He loved it. I did, if you remember, before Double or Nothing, the first one, we were doing those videos, like the road to Double or Nothing. Like we did a video of me. I was one of them. Mm-hmm. Because Joey Janela was talking about dying in a match with somebody. And then at the end, it was me, like a little story about my life. And I came back to England. I met Tony. And then, yeah, literally a month after retiring, or 2 months after retiring from boxing, I was signed to AEW. I signed to AEW before Double or Nothing. I was literally on the same contract, I presume the same one as you, May 1st, 2019, my contract started. I've been here since the very beginning. You know, I was in England. I'd never even taken a bump other than my stag do. I'm one of the OGs, believe it or not. That's it. That's how it happened, AEW.
Dang.
Yeah, I remember it was, and it's funny because my birthday is October 26th. And I remember vividly October 26th, 2019.
Yeah,
that was the All Elite graphic. Yeah, I remember that was the day you were announced as All Elite. You had, it was the Southside Wrestling's 9th anniversary show.
Yeah.
And then, yeah.
Chinned MJF, bang, middle of the ring, chinned MJF. Yeah, yeah. Got my phone out, done a selfie, done a Tyler Breeze, MJF on the floor. And yeah, that announced me to AEW. And I had to wait.
Yeah.
It took me a long time to get my visa. It was really frustrating. I got to AEW in September 2020. And I was training with a week in Atlanta with QT, and then we'd do TV in Jacksonville. So train a week. I literally had 50 training sessions of wrestling before I wrestled Cody Rhodes at Double or Nothing. Literally, I had a match with Cole Carter, 20-second punched him, I had a match with Austin Gunn, 2 minutes. He gave me one move, then I punched him. And my first real wrestling match, Cody Rhodes, after 50 training sessions. When I say I picked this up super quick, QT will tell you, I picked this up so quick. QT used to say to the kids, to the boys and girls at the school, he'd say, Gogo's had 20 training sessions. How come he can do this and you can't do this? He's learning. Why is he learning? It was like, at first I felt cool, but then I was a little awkward. I was like, oh, can you make me like, I want to make friends here. So I was so hungry to get good at this and to work hard. And I think, yeah, so I trained really hard and that's basically it.
So question, because I don't think people fully understand like 50 training sessions. Yeah, you can wrap your mind around like what that means. Like that's a very accelerated pace. But the other thing that kind of comes along with that is that if you've seen pictures of you and you were at the height of your boxing career, you were real, real thin, still very much in shape, but a lot thinner. And then by the time you come to America, you're this big, bulky Jack dude. That's a major transformation.
Yeah, so appreciate the fact that I used to box at 160. So pictures of me online on fight night on 160, I'd walk to the ring at 180, 185. Like most boxers put a lot of weight on. I'd walk around at 200. That's me training every day, just not killing myself. And I bring myself down from 190 to 160 over the course of 12 weeks. And that's what I mentioned before. I was so unbelievably dedicated. So when I became a wrestler, I went up from 200 to 220. And my entire life, I'd lost weight. My entire life. I was, my first fight, I boxed at 51.4 kilos, which is 220 pounds. I was 12. That day, I went to the gym the Monday and I was 54 kilos. And my coach said to me, you got a fight on Friday. I was at least 3 kilos, which is half a stone, which is 7 pounds as a 12-year-old. So I've been losing weight my entire life. I never really did much weights because you said my picture, I was so lean, nothing percent body fat. All cardio, all boxing. I never lifted a weight because I'm the kind of person, when I look at a weight, I put weight on. Do you mean like, so when I became a wrestler, it was gone from not eating anything and doing cardio to doing no cardio, just lifting weights. And I loved it. I loved it. I really enjoyed it because it was different for the first time in 18 years of doing a different kind of type of training. But yeah, the wrestling, when I first met Tony Khan, he was like, hey, I got the perfect spot for you. You guys are going to be Chris Jericho's heavy. Now, rumor has it, I mean, Jericho said it on podcast, he Googled me and saw me skinny little 160-pound middleweight and went, he's far too small, I don't want him, I want Jake Hager. So, that's annoying. So but he didn't see what I looked like. Like I was 225, 230. What did you? I was like, oh, that's frustrating. So, yeah, it's been, you know, this isn't a doom and gloom podcast. I'm very, very positive about my future in AEW. I just desperately want the opportunity to show what I can do. Mm-hmm. I know I can bring a lot. I know I can bring so much to AEW. There's nobody on the roster like me with my credentials, with my what I've actually done in legitimate fighting sports. I think what I have, when no one really talks like me, yes, we've got some English guys and girls on the roster, but they don't talk like me. Like, as I said earlier, they can't kick it in corporate and kick it in the head like I do.
Yeah.
So, I just think I want to be a big asset to the company because I love AEW and I really love what we do.
I want to talk about that Cody match. That was almost, that's a very interesting time, particularly because you made your debut on TV in March of 2021, which at that time period, no fans in the building. Mm. Obviously there was the pod seating and all that, but for the most part, we're still dealing with the pandemic era wrestling. And all of that build was to lead to a match at Double or Nothing, which was the first full capacity show. That was really your first experience, really being with this raucous crowd, Cody Rhodes. It was a big moment for him, but it was a big moment in general. Talk to me what that was like, having that in front of that crowd.
Oh, it was amazing. I wish there were fans from the beginning because we were guessing what they were doing. And the fans online, I know the fans online don't represent all the fans, but they loved me. They loved the way I walk and the suits I wore and everything was a little bit different with me. I wish we had that natural reaction to the crowd. And that's as we all know, that's the only way you really learn. Mm-hmm. But it was amazing. Working with Cody was great. Like working with Cody, he's so good. He's so, so, so good. He really is. Frustrating because in my first wrestling match, we'd planned a 16-minute banger. We'd planned these like moments. We'd planned these beautiful moments and this whole thing at the beginning. I decked him three times with three punches. Every single time he was out, you know, I've done Austin Gunn, blood everywhere. I done Cole Carter, he was out. I done Billy Gunn, I done Dustin. I knocked everyone out. Lee Johnson with my fist. And we planned this bit at the beginning where him with a body shot. And then QT's like, pin him. And I'm like, nah, I'm arrogant. I'm the governor. I want to win with a wrestling move. I'm going to give him my Olympic slam because I'm an Olympian. And then really slow and cocky, then cover. He kicks out, whoa, fuck. And then this is like a minute and a half for storytelling at the very beginning. I'll throw my shot. I've turned around to give it the big in, and he's there. I'm like, this wasn't what we planned. And now, because Cody being a professional like he is, we had 16 minutes. The match was 10 minutes plus entry. Mm-hmm. He cut all that time down because the previous match went heavy, and we had to kind of get back on track.
That whole pay per view is just a struggle with time because it was the first time we were back with a crowd. I think everything kind of took a little bit longer than expected. Mm. So
yeah.
You have no idea how much. so many people appreciate it.
And the match before was the Battle Royal too. That's like really hard to time.
Those historically always go over. They're very long. So yeah, I just wanted to say, you don't know how much we all appreciated that you guys did that, because it kept the show on track.
Thank you. Yes. But that pissed me off, right, in hindsight, because it's my first wrestling match. We've got 16 minutes, and I've lost half the stuff we were going to do. I've had to rush through the things we were going to do. And this is, people know Cody's a great wrestler. He's done it for years. People never seen me before. They've never seen what I can do. And that's my place to showcase what I can do. Mm-hmm. And then everything got rushed. In my head, it was like, oh, Cody's a wrestler. I'm a boxer. Like, he's beating me with a wrestling move rather than like a move that he hit on Dante Martin 2 weeks later, and he kicked out one too. It's like, it's this thing, it's just odd. It's just like, looking back, obviously the wonderful thing of hindsight, but my first entry into pro wrestling, I'm going to do what I'm told. I'm going to say, yes, please, no, thank you, and do what I want to do. And it's like, looking back, and even we filmed a really cool montage. We filmed a really cool, like, Rocky montage before the thing, and that got cut. So half the match got cut, plus my 5-minute thing I spent a lot of time doing got cut, which got really kind of whet the appetite for the fight. So it was a bit frustrating, really. Like, working with Cody was amazing, and it was great. And I was a bit spoiled, because working with one of the best wrestlers in the world, the first match I've ever had, I just thought everyone was like that. Oh, they're not. But it's frustrating, because, like I said, I mean, like, you know, but like, yeah, 15 training sessions and having a proper match, and, you know, we could have went 6, we could have went 25. We know, I think me and him have really good chemistry. And since then, Will, it's been 2.5 years since my last match on TV. And I've got so much better. And I had 34 matches. I say this when I do interviews, right? I say this when I'm talking from the governor perspective, I say it all cocky, but I actually really mean it. And there's a caveat to it. So don't, you know, just listen, let me say the caveat. I genuinely think, in the history of pro wrestling, I am the best 30-match novice there's ever been. Now, granted, like, most people will have 30 matches in 3 months, in 6 months, in a year maybe. I've had them spread over 4 years through no fault of my own. But match point, 34 matches, I can do things most 34 matches people can't do. Granted, I haven't had the Will's sitting there. Will's thinking, can you? Can you? Oh, 100%. I see that eyebrow. But I got, like I said, I've trained. Most people, they'll go do indies. They'll do a Friday, a Saturday, a Wednesday, a Monday, a Friday. They can rack up 30 matches pretty quickly. Like, I've taken a long time to amass mine, because I don't do a great deal of indies. But on the flip side as well, my entry level has been AEW. I've been watching Chris Jericho since I never really watched much indie wrestling. Mm-hmm. I've been training under QT. I've had QT Marshall, he's an unbelievable coach. I was trained under Brian Danielson, under Dave Taylor, William Regal, Cody, Dusty. Like, I've had the best coaches in the business train me at an elite level, not basic stuff. So, like, yes, I've had some of the best trainers in the world, like, coach me. Yeah, that's why I've picked up so quick, because it's when Brian Danielson's teaching you something, if you don't learn stuff, you're a fucking idiot. It's like, he's that good. And, yep. And then when Brian Danielson teaches you to do something, it just goes in much quicker and faster, because it's Brian Danielson. It's William Regal. Right? It's like, QT Marshall is, anything he asks you to do, he'll do unbelievably well. Not just able to do it, he can do it. He can do a 450 as good as anybody I've seen do a 450. Do you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. So it's hard not to, when Cody Rhodes tells you something, he can back up with a story when he's on the road with Randy Orton, or when he did this, or his dad told him to do that. It's like, it's backed up with so much weight. It's hard not to get better and to learn, you know? So, yeah, so I maintain what I said. And I think there's like a little stigma attached to me now. Maybe I've created this in my own head, but I think the stigma attached to me now, I think, is I've got all this potential, but I haven't got the experience yet. But how do you get experience when you're not given experience? Mm-hmm. You can go on the indies and do a little bit. I've got a match of Southern Honor in Georgia tonight. Just going to get another rep. But it's like, there's work in there and there's work in AEW, you know? So, like, I'm in a weird situation now where, like, I think there's a lot of potential around me, and people are, like, Tony Khan, he signed me and he's re-signed me. So he obviously sees something in me, and I have this aura which people haven't got because they haven't done what I've done in real life. But it's like, I need to get the experience, right? So it's the catch 22. What do? You know, do I pick myself out and do every indie just kind of get the experience? But then again, working in front of 100 people is very different to working in front of 5,000. against somebody else? Or do I just kind of sit and be patient? But I want to be patient. That's what I said about doing the podcast. I don't want to be patient anymore, Brittany. I want to kind of, I want to show my worth. I just want to show what I can do. And if I didn't think I was good, if I didn't think I could like deliver, I wouldn't be saying this. But I know what I can do. Like, I know what I have. I just want to contribute.
You're an absolutely incredible person, and your story is very inspiring. Every time I'm around you, I just feel like a better person because I know the things you've overcome and I know the work that you put in. A lot of people say that they do the work, but like to see the work that you're doing is very, very inspiring. So I just wanted to thank you for that.
Thank you so much.
Seriously.
And right back at you, there's a few faces that I see at TV and I could be having the worst day. And I spent a large part of my life here in America on my own. Like my family didn't come with me. I was here by myself and I come to TV having a bad day. And there's a few faces that I see and I smile. Yours is one of them. Jerry Lynn's one of them.
Oh, Jerry Lynn's the best.
He's the best. There's one or two, but yours, Jeff, Nyla's one of them. There's a few and I get all giddy and I forget my worries. So thank you so much for bringing so much positivity to my life.
Hell yeah. Anthony, I was so happy you got to join us today on this podcast. It was awesome chatting with you. What's the name of your podcast that people can check out?
Getting Back Up.
Getting back up. Inspiring stories with other people that have overcome adversity in their life, much like yourself, is just an absolutely incredible talk. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Aubrey Edwards with Will Washington. You can watch Dynamite on Wednesdays, Rampage Fridays, Collision on Saturdays, ROH on Thursdays. This podcast drops every Thursday on all of your favorite podcast platforms. You can watch it on our AEW podcast channel on Mondays on YouTube. Thank you so much for listening. This has been wonderful. Peace out, everybody.
Peace.
Come on, throw your hands up. Let me see you. Restricted, got the house now. We gon' turn it.